Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires the what. I'm Judy Steinig, Director of Community Programs for the Orthodox Union, and it's my honor to coordinate and host this program. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors. Everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Now, during the pandemic, SPIRIT is the perfect way for everyone to engage in a virtual setting. Today, we are so excited to present a very unique program. Why is there a coffee advertisement at your Seder? The story of the berry that looked like a bean. It is an honor to have Ellie Rosenfeld, CEO of Joseph Jacobs Advertising Agency, with us in the Spirit Forum. His full bio is on the materials you received and on our website. Ellie will share with us the story of the Maxwell House Haggadah. How appropriate for this to be our last program before our Pesach break. It is a pleasure and honor to turn the Spirit Forum over to Ellie Rosenfeld. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. I know you'll enjoy this.
Thank you so much, Rebbetzin Steinig. It was actually, as you and I were saying before, so funny when someone had asked me from the OU, Rabbi Howard had asked me to talk about this, and he was hoping to put the introduction together, and that you had told him that you and I have worked together on projects a number of times before. So it's always happy. I was glad to work with people that are so great to work with. So thanks so much for putting this together and for this entire program. I'm going to share my screen here so that everybody can take a look as we walk along an interesting little journey. So just give me one second here to get my screen shared. And I think we are up. Let me just make sure. Everybody can see what we're doing. Someone can shake their head. Okay. So as Rebbetzin Steinig mentioned, my name is Ellie Rosenfeld and I'm CEO of Joseph Jacobs Advertising. Although today we're going to talk about a little bit the history of the Maxwell House Haggadah with what I'm sure many of you are familiar. We're going to talk a little bit about how and what that means in the world of kosher, in the world of Jewish marketing, and really to all of us that are, let's say, affiliated with the OU and part of the Jewish community, what that looks like and how that affected the world that we live in today. So came up with this interesting little name because as we get through, you'll understand why, but the berry that looked like a bean, the story and the history of the Maxwell House Haggadah. So it all started out with this interesting guy named Joe Jacobs. As I mentioned before, the name of our firm is Joseph Jacobs Advertising, named for our founder, who founded the firm in 1919. Joe, interestingly enough, was not an Orthodox Jew. He was a Reformed German Jew who had been here for some time. And in the early teens, mid-teens, he was working for the Forwards, then, of course, a Yiddish daily. And he was selling advertising space for them. And he found clients that wanted to be more than just in the one newspaper. They wanted to be in the multitude of other Yiddish dailies in the Lower East Side of New York. There was Der Woch, Der Blatt, Der Yid, Der Morning Journal. There were so many of these daily papers that he decided to step away from working for the Forward and start a service where he would place ads in all of these different newspapers. So what he ended up doing was creating the idea of Jewish marketing. You came to Joe, and Joe was able to put your ad wherever you needed to be. And obviously we're talking about the Lower East Side, but at that same time, cities and communities throughout the country had their Jewish newspapers, many in English, many in Yiddish, a few that started out in Yiddish. But I'm gonna talk a little bit about Joe and really what he did that allowed the Maxwell House Haggadah to exist, but then allowed things on a greater scale to exist. And oddly enough, it all started not with the Aleph, not with an A, but with the letter K. We're all very familiar. You pick up a product and there's a kosher certification on there. There's a symbol. But what was kosher back in 1919, in 1910, in the 1880s? For the most part, people ate close to home. The food they ate was produced close to home. They went to the corner bakery. Their butcher was their shochet in many cases. Milk came from the milkman. There wasn't a question of what was kosher. The simplicity of food allowed kosher to, in many cases, there were obviously lots of stories that wasn't always the case. Famous stories about, you know, Treif meat being sold as kosher, et cetera. But for the most part, you trusted your butcher, you trusted your baker, and that's really where things ended. But as food production became more, I would say more technological, as it might be, even though it might've been 1920 or 1910, things were produced elsewhere. Canned goods were becoming more common, more affordable. And someone needed to supervise those products. A lot of companies were willing to allow a rabbi into the plant. And in many cases, it was a simple thing to do because the plant made three things. The Rav would come in, he'd look at what was there, and that was the end of that. But they didn't want Yiddish on their package. They didn't. They didn't want Hebrew. They didn't want Yiddish. They said, Rabbi, come in and do this, but you know, you tell your people. So Joe came up with this idea, and he said, I'll tell the people. And these are ads that are much later, obviously. These aren't ads from the early 1900s. These are probably from the 80s or the 90s, the 70s even. But if you take a look at the very bottom, and I'm pointing to my other screen here, my apologies, but look here, K-certified kosher. Joe told them, put a K on the product, then pay him, of course. And I'll do the rest. I'll tell the world, I'll tell them that the product is kosher. And to this very day, that is still the case. But there were issues with that because the K was unregulated. It could have meant any rabbi. The same way we were looking for a kosher certification because the product wasn't made down the street or in your neighborhood or your local Rav. It was a situation where you needed to understand who was that rabbi behind it. So at about that same time, the OU's Kashrus division was being born. And as the story goes, and many of you may or may not know, in 1927, the OU was working with Heinz, the famous for ketchup and baked beans, and their marketing team, with the guidance of Joe Jacobs and the OU, invented the OU. The Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America existed, but the OU logo did not. And although they started giving hashgachos a number of years before 1927, it was a larger, clunky icon, symbol, that had Hebrew on it, it had Yiddish on it, it had English on it. And Heinz said, we are willing to put out a product that meets your certification standards, but we don't want to put this thing on there. So Joe, and I believe Rabbi Goldstein at the OU, and the Heinz marketing team in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, designed the OU symbol, which today is still found on, obviously, as we know, 250,000 products, 60 countries. You go any corner of this planet and there's going to be an OU product in that supermarket, in that grocery store, that convenience store that you walk into. And here's what gets interesting. Take a look at it, educate people. On the right side here, this is an ad from, I don't know what year to be perfectly honest, and my Yiddish is poor. We could either thank or blame my parents, who I would like to thank for showing up today or actually watching us. But my very poor Yiddish does tell me, what is this OU? Take a look at this in the middle here in bold. Orthodox Jewish, Dalet Zion Shin, Congregations of America. And they're explaining right here that the product has the OU, Heinz, vegetarian, bubloch, beans. And then it goes through a list. Heinz cream of tomato soup. Heinz cream of mushroom soup. So these ads were taken out in Yiddish newspapers to tell people what the OU symbol was, what it meant, and which products. And this is a much later, this ad's probably from about the, I'm gonna guess the 60s. And obviously it still, you know, explains to people what the OU means on these labels. And to this day, the OU symbol, as we all know, and I'm saying this, of course, we're speaking, you know, today with the OU, it's really a sign of trust and regulation. It's one of the big four, as we know, with the OU, the OK, the Star K, and the Kuf K are the largest of the four kosher certification agencies in the world. And big brands from Oreo to Kraft Foods for Polio, and this is an older ad from Pepperidge Farm, really understand that that symbol really means something to them. Let's get back to Joe. Joe continued working with these brands over the years. He continued to get the word out that kosher was important. This goes back even to just explaining to them the cultural relevance. Lord Calvet, a liquor. Take a look at this, Simchas Torah. He was able to tell people that Simchas Torah was a time people drank and that Lord Calvet should be advertising. For a sparkling Passover, he has Easy Off and he has their spray in Santaflesh, how to clean your home. Love this, kosher purity for Fab and Ajax. It was something that he went and K on the can means kosher. And that continued, obviously these down here have an OU, but he continued to pushed the market. And that really helped all of us today, because without Joe and then his son later, Dick, running around the country or the world and promoting the fact that there is a market here, we wouldn't have the 250,000 products with kosher food today, because the brands, the companies, the people that managed all of them wouldn't have believed and seen that it was an important market. So at this time of year, it's always appropriate to tip our yarmulke, as it is, to Joe and to his forethought and his understanding what this market can mean in the world out there. Now let's get back sort of to our feature presentation today. Joe was out there and he was doing this, as I said, from 1919 into the 20s, into the 30s. But let's go back to 1923 for a moment, when Joe met up with the Cheek Neal Coffee Company in what would become the calling card for Dick and Joe Jacobs, and even me to this very, very day. He met with the Maxwell's Coffee Company that was bringing up their new coffee from the Maxwell House Hotel of Nashville, Tennessee. Maxwell House Hotel in Nashville had their house coffee, and they were bringing it up to New York. Now, here's the interesting part, and this is where we get into the bean that thought it was a berry, the berry that thought it was a bean, I'm sorry. March 15th, 1923, this ad ran in Yiddish, Mitzvah Aleinu L'Saper. It is a mitzvah to tell you, Maxwell House coffee is kosher L'Pesach. At that point, there was a real concern, and we'll talk about this in just a moment, that coffee beans were, of course, kidneys. As we know, they are not. Sit back for the next 3.5 minutes and watch the tale.
The Passover Seder. Once a year, Jewish people all around the world review the story of how God delivered the Jews from slavery into freedom, and they read it from this book, the Haggadah. Now, there are a lot of different versions of the Haggadah, but this one is considered the standard, the Maxwell House Haggadah. Wait a second. How did a coffee company get into the business of making Haggadahs? Let me explain. You see, on Passover, most Jewish people have a tradition of not eating bread or wheat, grains, other bread-like ingredients such as legumes or beans, a category known as kidneyot. Now, in the early 1900s, there was a little confusion in the Jewish community as to whether or not coffee beans, like other beans, were considered kidneyot. However, coffee beans aren't really beans, they're fruit. To clarify this misconception, Maxwell House partnered with Joseph Jacobs Advertising, who then worked with rabbis to get a special certification for the holidays, declaring that coffee is in fact kosher for Passover. But then a few years later, Joseph Jacobs had a pretty neat idea. They thought that Maxwell House could build a strong brand among the Jewish demographic if they gave more than just coffee around the holidays. They could give a Haggadah.
Avadim Hayinu. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and God took us out. But if God didn't take our forefathers out, then we would still be slaves today. That's why we continue to tell the story of the Exodus, to never forget that God saved us, just like he saved our forefathers.
Since its beginning, Maxwell House has given away free copies of the Haggadah with purchases of their coffee. This generous distribution model has allowed the book to emerge as the gold standard of Haggadahs.
Whoever does not explain the three symbols at the Passover Seder has not fulfilled the Seder.
Pesach is the sacrificial offering to God for taking us out of slavery.
The matzah reminds us of how quickly we left Egypt, that we didn't have time to let the dough rise.
And maror reminds us of the bitterness of slavery.
Okay, great. Let's eat.
Oh, thank you. In 2011, Joseph Jacobs and Maxwell House did a complete overhaul of the Haggadah to make it more accessible. They updated the translation and illustration to make the Seder more inviting to a modern reader. Since its first publication in 1932, over 55 million copies of the Haggadah have been printed. And even today, through its long-standing partnership with Joseph Jacobs, Maxwell House continues to produce over 1 million copies annually, making Maxwell House Coffee a household name among the Jewish people. Am I right? I can eat some more of this.
So, that really tells the whole story. So I could probably sit back here and just rest, but I'll go through some interesting aspects and interesting little tidbits about the Haggadah. So as you saw here quickly in the video, and I'll go through and talk about this, the Haggadah came out initially in 1932, and it was very similar in many ways into the 30s and 40s, into the 50s even. We'll go through the next couple of pages, but one thing was very interesting. In the 1960s, when it was updated, the consumer, the market, the community was changing. So certain parts of the Haggadah had transliteration added so that people that yet couldn't necessarily read the Hebrew, they were able to pronounce things in Hebrew. Potentially they had grandparents at the table or parents at the table that wanted to be able to do the Haggadah in its original, but they knew there was a challenge. So the market already was evolving at that point in the 60s. And that carried through all the way. And in fact, the Haggadah, which many of you, and I'll show you some of them that I have here, was identical inside from 1960s all the way up until 1998. In 98, the book had been actually revised again. And then again in 2011, something most interesting was done. The translation, as was mentioned in the video, was really updated. And we'll talk about in just a moment how it was gender neutralized and modernized. This is the inside of one of the original versions. So I can actually show you right here. This is the 1939 copy that I have here in my hand. And if you take a look inside these etchings and you have them on your screen, they are old school. They in fact spoke to a different audience. I recently even read that these may have been coming out of a Christian biblical illustrated, you know, story of the Exodus where they've come from. But they spoke to the consumer at the time and they really did something in a way that other books then probably were doing, but never really connected as much for reasons that never really were understood. Consumers just took to this book. But take a look at the English here, and we'll go through it as we go along. But, you know, the eternal, this page doesn't have hast on it, but let's take a look and we go to the next couple pages. This is the interior of the book that you're probably all familiar with. It's, let's get one here. It's the issue that came out in the early 1960s. But then the same version was done in the 1970s and 80s. And then I've got one that's missing here. Here we go. In the 1990s, but the inside of this was always the same. These very 1960s-esque illustrations. And again, take a look at this. Blessed art thou, O eternal, our God, King of the universe, who hast made a distinction between holy and the not holy, between light and darkness. Take a look at the way the layout is put together. Interestingly enough also, it continued the Hebrew being on the right and the English being on the left column, which is uncommon today. If any of us pick up a sitter or any other type of translated sefer, it's usually opposing pages. This is the design that was kept. And then when we redid the Haggadah actually in 1998, we kept that design. Take a look at almost, I'm gonna flip right back, I can't say the book was exactly mimicked, but take a look at how we were able to, you know, to change that. But we did update something so that those illustrations became photographs. It became more modern, but we are still at art thou, O eternal. And we can keep going between, you know, hast, makest, who makest a distinction. I'm sure we all speak that way on a regular basis. Let's fast forward a little bit to the year 2011. This is that same part of the Haggadah. The top here is the transliteration still from Kiddush, the way it laid out, but obviously something significantly more modern when we did this. Now, one of the interesting parts, of course, is we updated the English. So if we take a look very quickly here, there's always that conversation. What'd you do to the English to make it gender neutral? We get calls on a regular basis. Is this an orthodox? Is it appropriate? Is it original? Most interestingly enough, as we might know, why was there a gender issue? So there were two issues with the English translation. One, of course, was that it wasn't modern. as we said, hast, makest, no one speaks that way. No one wants to read an English book that way. And then on the flip side, there are parts of the market, parts of the consumer world that would like something to be a little bit balanced. Now, the Hebrew language, as other languages have gender-specific verbs and pronouns. What do you do with that? So you take a look. The Rambam talks about that we're not supposed to attribute a gender to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God. We shouldn't have, because God, of course, is Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There isn't a gender, but when you speak of a deity, when you speak of a king, when you speak of a plural of a group, the appropriate grammatical way to do that, and the way that we know that, of course, Tanakh does it, and the Gemara does it, and all of our Sfarim do it, is to speak of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the male form. So when translated directly into English, you end up with a male translation. Now, the Rambam says you're not supposed to really do that. So all you need to do is rewrite English so that it doesn't do that, which is relatively simple, right up until you come to a word like Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech. What do you do when actually it says a male form? It doesn't say Malka. What do you do? So you have to be a little bit creative in order to do things that are accurate, halachic, and approachable. Blessed are you, our God, monarch of the universe. Because a king is a monarch, it is not an inaccurate translation. And it was able to satisfy the needs of the marketing team a little bit at Kraft, as well as our needs to ensure that everything was 100% accurate and kosher. We also updated, as you see here, the way things are translated. As I said, I don't have here, I will open up an older Haggadah for a moment and translate. I did not put that into the slideshow, but if you take a look here, we have Manish Tana. Wherefore is this night distinguished from all other nights? Versus why is this night different from all other nights? Imagine your six-year-old granddaughter trying to read this. Wherefore is this night distinguished from all other nights? That would make for a comical Seder, but it probably would have her breaking her teeth, because we keep going further into it. It's not what you do in 2010, 2020, 2021. So that is where we did here, and we updated. And then that, again, down at the bottom, we still maintained in certain parts of the Seder to have transliteration, so that we were able to, ensure that people were finding the Hebrew vernacular that they might have wanted over time. Now, this became a cultural icon over time, and that's what I think is very interesting. So Maxwell House isn't only. We'll take a look here, just from 2011, the New York Times ran, and this is the digital version, ran a full page story on the updates to the Maxwell Haggadah. If that doesn't tell you that this is a cultural icon, that this is part of the American Jewish experience, nothing does. On the left side here of your, on the right side of your screen, is a story from the Associated Press, which ran in dozens of newspapers, again, telling that same story in 2011. That became a cultural icon. And it wasn't just because of the Haggadah itself. In 1974, this was what they call a shelf tag. Hangs on the shelf of a supermarket. If you bought Maxwell House coffee, because Maxwell House was, according to this ad from April 29th, 1948, the Shabbos coffee, because of their instant coffee, it was the Shabbos coffee. So still in the 70s, we gave away Shabbos candlesticks if you were able to buy Maxwell's coffee. It made the brand part of the Jewish community. You take a look here, as I was mentioning earlier, ads running in Yiddish. This ran in 1948. And one of the cool things about owning an agency that's 101 years old is that you have this original piece of tear sheet from the newspaper in 1948. And we have the original carbon copy. Yes, what CC truthfully stands for, because they type these things with carbon paper. The translation of the ad that was given to the client, because ostensibly the people at General Foods and Maxwell House didn't speak or read Yiddish. And this is an original copy of the carbon that we kept on file here from August 2nd, 1948. So this ad ran in the neighborhood of Rosh Hashanah time of that year. It's become such a cultural icon that, not trying to get political, but in the first year of the, I'll tell an interesting story. In the first year of the Obama presidency, I was home for Pesach as I usually am. I wake up Pesach morning and the newspaper is outside and I open up the paper, perusing after I get home from shul, and there is a small little photo with a small caption, Obama holds Seder at the White House. And there's a small picture. I tell you a small picture. But I know what I work on and I know what we do here. And although this is not the exact picture, there was a picture of President Obama holding the Maxwell House Haggadah. And for all the years, of the Obama administration, they held a Seder. And if you take a look carefully, you can see that right over here on the bottom is Maxwell's Haggadah. And you can see one in front of the president, in front of all of the attendees. They had this Seder that they held in the White House. The story is very interesting. It's because during the campaign the previous year, the first night of Pesach came out and the campaign was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And they were staying at the Sheraton Hershey Harrisburg, where I've actually stayed a number of times. And a number of the Jewish staffers, I would assume not necessarily Orthodox, they were on the campaign trail. They gathered together to have themselves a Seder. And they're sitting around having their, you know, their Seder because they weren't able to get home for Pesach because they were on the campaign trail. And then candidate Obama, the senator, pokes his head into the room and says, I heard you guys doing a Seder. And he sits down and joins them. And of course, you know, rah, rah, we're going to win the campaign next year in Jerusalem. And if not next year in the White House. And the following year, he held the Seder. It was Yontif. The first morning when I saw this in the newspaper, I couldn't reach out to the client until the next night after Havdalah. And I emailed, no one at Kraft had seen this. And it became an ongoing thing at Kraft to ensure that the White House was supplied with Haggadahs for those number of years to ensure that we were there with a great story, because there was a Haggadah that came out a few years ago by J.J. Goldberg. And J.J. Goldberg had been interviewing the president in the Oval Office, I believe, for The Atlantic. And at the end of the interview, Mr. President, I'd like you to review a book. Oh, okay, pulls it out. He goes, it's actually not a book, it's a Haggadah. And Obama quipes to him without missing a beat, does that mean we can't use that the Maxwell House anymore? And that is what it means to be part of the American culture. We actually presented in 2012 or 13 at the White House. No, it must have been, that's about right. During Jewish American Heritage Month, all of the Haggadot from all of the decades past as part of the American Jewish experience. And very interestingly, you take a look here. This is what the Haggadah looks like when you get it in the store typically. There's this nice shipper, and this is a picture of the Haggadahs that are there. It's also interesting because the Maxwell's Haggadah has been at every single theater of war and in the field for the U.S. Armed Services since World War II. You take a look here, and these are obviously servicemen and women enjoying their Seder with their Maxwell House Haggadah. And then as we spoke about it becoming a cultural icon, 3 years ago, many of you might be familiar with the show, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, very popular on Amazon Prime. And, you know, Midge Maisel is a comedian, you know, fictional comedian from the late 1950s, early 1960s. And they wanted to do some marketing for Pesach to get people to watch the show. And what is the logical thing that if Midge was a real person, she would do at her home with her parents at Pesach in 1957? She would have, let me find the right one. She would have had one of these Haggadahs. Something looks like this. So it only was logical to have the special Mrs. Maisel version of the Haggadah. That was an amalgam of a 1950s Haggadah, the 1960s, 70s Haggadah, which many people are familiar with if you take a look at the layout. But if you look very carefully, the Hebrew was retypeset, and they of course put in, let me find, some very special illustrations to add to it. It served its purpose as doing two things. It became a cultural icon, and we always forget one part of this. People call me up all the time about the Haggadah, and we forget there's a purpose here. Maxwell House loves being part of the Jewish community, but they also like to sell coffee. So this actually did something and turned the Maxwell's Haggadah into the next generation of sales tool. This was only available when you bought your coffee on Amazon. You couldn't get it at ShopRite, you couldn't get it at Publix, you couldn't get it at HEB or at Ralph's. You had to go online and buy Maxwell's coffee on Amazon in order to get this book. But look at this, they had these great illustrations they did, which really speak to understanding what the program and what the product is really about and what the culture of Jewish America is. And it's very interesting. This is a business for us, for Maxwell House. But at the same time, I truly believe that over the decades, many, many, many Jewish homes in this country would have lost any ritual, any aspect of Yiddishkeit at their Seder if it wasn't for this book. If Maxwell's Coffee didn't give them this, or the current version, which just got into a pile, there would be no ritual left. People would go to ShopRite, they'd go to Publix, they'd buy their box of matzah, they'd come home, they wouldn't know what to do because they wouldn't have the handy dandy guide in front that tells you how to make the Seder plate, what needs to be on the Seder plate, what needs to be on the table. You end up with families that would not know or have the four questions. Maybe today, or certainly today, you end up in a place where you can go online and find things. But for decades before, it would have been lost. There wouldn't have been a reason for families, for grandchildren, for great-grandchildren to care. You know, it says in the Haggadah, mitzvah aleinu l'saper, it's a mitzvah for us to tell you, and to be gadlecha levedcha b'yom ahuv lemor, you want to tell your people, you want to tell your children. And the truth is, without the Maxwell's Haggadah, Pesach in America very, very likely would have been lost decades ago because of just sitting back. We unfortunately all know of many people that don't have a Jewish education, you know, to be brought up. But at the end of the day, the largest Judaica publisher in America is the Maxwell House Coffee Company. And it is because of them that thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Jews could sit around their table with some semblance of what their parents or grandparents or great-grandparents did. And they otherwise would not have that experience. I'm happy to take some questions. I'm happy to, I think that Rebbetzin Steinig said they're going to open up to be able to type in some chat and some questions. I'm happy to answer them if we want to go from there. I will share my screen only so everybody's screen can get bigger and we can see each other.
Just one second. Ellie, that was amazing. Thank you so much. I remember a lot of those Haggadahs. It was using them. Okay, so.
Do you remember this jar of coffee? How about that?
I'm not a coffee drinker though, but the rest of the family is. Okay. So the one question is, why don't you believe that some other source would have stepped up to provide Haggadahs if Maxwell House hadn't done so?
There have been, and there still are, many, many free Haggadahs. They really do exist. Banks gave them away. Certainly, I think when Joe started this, it wasn't the only free Haggadah around. The distribution model is really what I think makes the difference. Other companies didn't even have the wherewithal. It wasn't within their DNA over the decades. I can tell you dealing with different, I've thankfully been working on this project since I got to Joseph Jacobs in 1996, that with many different management teams and corporate ownerships of Kraft, et cetera, that owns Maxwell's Coffee, if someone isn't driven and it's not part of a brand's DNA, it's a relatively expensive proposition to do this. And again, the distribution model. Who's going to say, I'm going to give out hundreds of thousands of these books every year, get them into a supermarket where you have to buy matzah, you have to buy wine, you have to buy grape juice, you have to buy milk. If you keep kosher or not keep kosher, you need to be at your supermarket. Getting it out there some other way is just not, it's just not logical.
Okay.
Someone here has a question. Is there a version in Israel American version? I can now see them, yes. Is there a version in Israel? There is not a version in Israel. There is a, because Maxwell House only has a small bit of market share in Israel. It is an American promotion. In fact, it's only every few years it's available even in Canada. But there's a great story that's told. It's in one of the books I have behind me here, that there's a Russian Jewish family living somewhere in Israel to this very day, I believe. And they have, and their Haggadah that they use for Pesach, the Maxwell's Haggadah. Someone was in their home and said, where did you get a Maxwell's Haggadah? It doesn't make sense. This is a Russian family who at some point in the late 90s made their way to Israel from the Soviet Union, never lived in America, don't particularly speak English. Well, when they were behind the Iron Curtain, people, of course, smuggled things in for the refuseniks and the Jews there. And not knowing exactly how they all got there, but Haggadot were brought into Russia, and they were the Maxwell's Haggadah. And this family's Haggadah that they were able to use and hide in Russia was the Maxwell House Haggadah. And when they left and went to Israel, that is the Haggadah they brought, and that is the Haggadah their family still uses, because that's what they used in the Soviet Union. So unfortunately, there isn't a version that's available for Israel. And to be honest with you, in Israel, they don't particularly need the English translation.
Okay. Why doesn't the Maxwell House Haggadah talk about the search for chametz and the nullification of chametz?
The Haggadah starts, and it's designed to be for the Seder evening itself. There's also no, if the question comes up, I'm happy to answer it. There's no commentary. I've had people reach out to me. It's a great opportunity to tell people what this all means, and to give commentaries to people and give midrashim and perushim. At the end of the day, the simplistic version is what is going to be accepted by people that don't understand much more. And then, to be perfectly honest, you want something that's not going to be controversial. You want something that's going to, for lack of a better word, be parav to that experience. You want something that is that evening. We certainly could go through, have an entire halach guide in the front of how to prepare one's home for Pesach and how to kasher, but that's the job of another product.
Okay. Somebody wants to know, I assume you have a copy of every Haggadah, and they want to know if it could be viewed through the OU or elsewhere online.
The open pages of the Haggadah are not available online. There are pictures online. My website might have a little bit of it. Again, if you Google a bit, you'll see there are articles and pictures around, but I do have them. They are available for sale on eBay occasionally if one is interested in starting a collection. That is how a lot of my collection has started. We always had a few. Over the years, I've continually purchased ones that I felt that I missed or whatnot. And but there's no open source anywhere that has every page of every book.
And someone wants to know who owns the copyright.
Copyright is owned by Kraft Foods. Obviously the Hebrew text is open source. I think anybody could use the text of the Haggadah. The translation was written originally for Maxwell House, and the current translation when we did it in 2010, 2011 was done specifically for Kraft Foods.
It's interesting. A couple of comments have come in about other places giving away. They said Empire Company gave away Art Scroll Haggadahs.
Correct.
With the chickens. And then somebody else said ShopRite underwrote a Haggadah.
ShopRite, again, these are all ones that have done them for a few years. We were involved with some of them. Some of them were before our involvement. I have a couple of them, the Empire ones behind us. I have a few of the ShopRite ones at home. In fact, we were involved in that in some way because ShopRite's actually a client for certain projects. But no one has continued it. It worked for a period, and then they stepped back. Publix has done them. I have a whole bunch. You know, El Al does them. You'll find them. No one has the wherewithal to feel that it's part of their DNA. If you look at marketing today, people always want to be authentic. They want to go back and they want to say, oh, we've been doing this for decades, for years. Even if they haven't, they find a way to write it. But the one thing that is difficult for a brand to do is to find something that they truly, truly are authentic at. And this is something that, as I know I say it, I've said it a few times, it's really part of the fabric of this brand.
So somebody made a comment that the White House presentation was in 2012 before the election that year. And then there's a lot of compliments to you. But they also have a beautiful comment. They say, this is the unique American Jewish experience. What's exciting year to year using the Maxwell House Haggadah are the wine stains and matzah scars on them. The memories are so deep. And I think everybody can identify with that.
I think everyone can. And in fact, I'll pull out this version again of the Mrs. Maisel version. Just to make it authentic, we sent it with the stains in advance. So the idea is that if you take a look, this was written, it was supposed to be Midge's, she made a note on it. And if you scroll through, you'll see that there are, if anybody has copies of them, these are also available a little bit on eBay to purchase. They're no longer available as a one-year project but there are, as I said, wine stains, wine rings, and the Haggadot that we use at our table have wine and matzah crumbs in the right places throughout the book. And we get calls from people, emails, we are missing or we ruined a Haggadah from our set Do you have a 1993 so that we could fill it in? And in many cases, we don't. We do have things from years, but start pulling out the exact ones gets difficult. And in fact, I'll tell you, it was when we redid the book, I was lucky enough, I redid it twice. We wanted to see if we could keep the pagination, right? The same, is the pagination the same from the original ones, quote unquote, from the 60s, 70s, and 80s? And it was very difficult to do. We felt that we couldn't do that, but there was a concern that everybody should be along the same page. And I'll tell you, this year, when people can't find the Haggadah at their supermarket, they can order them to pay for the shipping and handling. Someone reached out to our office a couple of weeks ago, and because of the year we're in, the family is not entirely traveling. So they wanted us to send the Haggadah. This is a family that will be doing a Zoom Seder, ostensibly. They wanted us to send Haggadot to different locations so that everybody in the family will be working off the same book and be on the same page. Someone here asked a question, sent me a direct question. Is it being used at the White House Seder this year? I don't have an answer to that. The White House hasn't reached out to us yet. There's obviously a question, I guess, if President Biden feels the need to continue that tradition or pick that tradition back up. During the Trump years, there were some Seders over the years. It wasn't something that the president himself, I believe, was involved with for the most part, but there were some administration and team officials that were part of those events. I do know, for instance, I think for a number of years, there was Megillah reading in the White House over the Trump administration. So everybody's got their own little piece, but if they reach out for Haggadot, we will be more than happy to get them to them.
I don't see any more questions. Do you?
I do not in my chat.
No, I don't.
Anyone else? Speak now.
Speak now. Okay, I guess that's it. Well, thank you so much. That was just amazing. I think you gave us a lot to talk about at our Seders.
There's a lot to talk about.
I'm sure everybody will have the Maxwell House Haggadah there. It's definitely in our collection.
It's definitely in our collection. Someone recently asked on Facebook, what Haggadah does someone use, you know, in your house? And I'm like, well, we have multitudes, but we certainly do use the Maxwell House Haggadah.
For sure, that's part of everyone's.
I'll give you one extra little tidbit. Just, we do tell some people, but not all people, just for the fun of this. So this is devoid of people for a variety of reasons. It didn't need it, it didn't this, but this was shot actually with accoutrements from my home. But there is one person, because you can't have Manish Tana without having a child there. So this little girl here that reads Manish Tana, she happens to be then my 6-year-old, but now my 16-year-old, who is still very proud, by the way, that she is the Manish Tana girl in the Maxwell Haggadah. We tried to warn her when she was six that, you know, this is going to be there for a while. You might not find it so funny when you're a teenager. And to the best of her ability, she didn't worry, but she really does still embrace this to this day. So if you happen to see my daughter roaming around Teaneck, New Jersey, you're welcome to say, I saw your face at my Seder table.
Okay. So the Rosenfelds are with us, all of us.
I like to tell people that she's been at as many Seders as Eliyahu.
Okay. That totally works. Okay. Well, thank you so much. As I had said earlier in the program, Spirit is going on Pesach break starting after this program. But we are returning Be'ezras Hashem on April 13th, and that will be celebrating the first anniversary of our Zoom Spirit program. And we'll have a presentation by Moshe Bain, president of the Orthodox Union. So we are coming back. When we return, you will be seeing new branding for Spirit with a new and improved logo and a whole Spirit website. You'll be getting lots of information about that in the next few weeks. So there are more details to come. Just stay tuned. As we celebrate our first anniversary, we ask for everyone's help to continue our programming. Use the Spirit program to commemorate a simcha or memorialize the loved one, and feel free to contact me privately for more details. So I want to wish everyone a great day, a good Shabbos, and a Chag Kashir B'Sameach, be safe and healthy. Thank you again, Ellie, so much for joining us, and it's always great to see you.
Pleasure.